All right, everybody, it's Joel Radio. How you doing out there in podcast land? Joel Fragamenti here with Corey Hall.
Shabbat Shalom.
How you doing, Corey?
What's up?
It's the Ides of March.
That's right. I want to say l'chaim to all my Hebrews and Shemites out there for St. Patrick's Day.
Yes. What do the Jews do for St. Patrick's Day?
We get a little bit of Chinese. We, you know.
You're not we. You're not them.
What? I was raised amongst the Jews.
I understand that, but
I have lain with the daughters of Abraham and Sarah.
Me too, actually. But anyway, let's get into this show. We got a lot going on today. When I say a lot, I mean I really have no idea.
Yeah.
When I say a lot, I mean very little, but it will take us very long to get through the very
little. Hey, it's a free form Friday. Call us.
Yeah, really.
Flash Friday. Ladies, get those baps out. All right. Goodness. 13th caller, number 2955724. Call in.
All right, let's go into a lot going on.
Well, dangle in the schnoz.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, well, where do you want to start? I mean, we've got some deaths, a celebrity death, and then a death in the comedy world who was not a celebrity, who I'd like to talk about.
Uh-huh.
Or we can talk about stuff that was on television. We can talk about my my interview with All Access magazine. What would you like to talk about?
Oh, yeah, go ahead. Fire up that one.
All Access?
Yeah,
sure.
Break. Go ahead.
Well, I was interviewed for All Access. Now, when I say All Access magazine, I'm guessing there's not an All Access magazine anymore, but it's a radio insider site. I think it's actually a pay site, but they profile podcasters.
Okay.
And I was profiled. And I kind of wrote the whole story of this show and me and you and all kinds of stuff in there. So if you want to know more about the show, if you're a newbie to the show, I think if you listen to the show, if you've listened to the show for 11 years, you probably would know more or less what the story is.
If you've been listening to the show for
that's what I mean.
You live in Canada and you eat whale blubber.
Well,
no, there's a couple diehards.
Yeah,
you
would probably know a lot of this, but it was a lot about, you know, you were the first comedian to do a podcaster. Tell us about that kind of stuff. And it's all on there. I'll try to put the link on the Joel Radio .net website. So look up this show on there and you'll see a link to All Access. Hopefully, because the guy that did the interview sent me the link. Like, I didn't need, because otherwise I think it's behind a paywall. I think my secret link will get you in.
It's behind a paywall.
I think it's behind a paywall. Well, like I said, it's for radio stations. You know, it's for people in the radio industry. I think if you were looking for a job in radio, you would go on to All Access, which is funny because that comes up.
There was one aspect of the Corey and Joel radio show you did not bring up.
Oh, what was that?
Relating to radio.
Oh, when we actually got the radio job?
We actually got onto a radio station that then flipped formats.
I didn't want to. You know what? I couldn't shoehorn that in. I tried to, and then
I mean, you talked about, we did.
Well, that was the genesis of this show, was to be a radio show.
We were doing audition tapes in your apartment in Hamtramck.
Yes.
Before even podcasting was around.
It may or it probably did not exist when we did that initial demo. Like, there was no podcasting.
And there was, like, internet radio.
Yeah, there was streaming radio. There was, like, Live 365 and shit like
the
that.
The premise of
real audio.
Yeah, and there was some YouTube-y kind of stuff, but the premise
YouTube did not exist. We predate YouTube.
Oh, you're right.
We do predate YouTube, yeah.
YouTube, what, was 2007?
Yeah, YouTube was later than us.
All right. So, when we first did that, what would we do that? 2004?
It was 2004, yeah.
When we were, there were open calls for auditions for...
It was either late 2003, 2004, because that's when I lived in that apartment, was 2002 to 2004.
Joel lived in an apartment next door. The people next door, one downstairs was...
Well, I had two different apartments in Hamtramck, actually, so that spanned
at this one,
3 years. But the second one was where we did the demo,
The middle floor of a three-decker.
It was, yes.
And then either the girl above you or below you was a stripper.
The girl below me was a stripper.
And she
had
like
a place on 7 Mile.
And she'd occasionally just get real shit faced and stumble up to your apartment.
Yeah, she would get drunk and come upstairs and would start making out with me.
Yeah.
I never fucked that lady, but I, you know.
And why not?
Well, because the guy that lived with her was
a giant man.
I wasn't like afraid of him, but you should be afraid of any guy's wife.
This was a real...
Any wife's husband.
Let me tell you, this is a real urban living experience.
It really was, yeah.
Because you had a stripper downstairs, and then like there were like some like tweaker kids upstairs.
No, it was like an Albanian guy.
Oh, okay.
Who had DJ equipment.
DJ equipment.
So he would DJ.
And then next door, and I shit you not.
Yeah.
Next door, there was a rooster.
Yeah. It might have been two doors down. Okay. Was the rooster.
Somewhere on the street.
There was a guy with chickens, and I found a rooster like under my garbage can one day, dead rooster.
Oh.
I went out to the alley to, you know, take my garbage cans in or put the garbage out or whatever, and there was a dead rooster. So I don't know if the guy was cockfighting or if he was just raising.
But you could hear the rooster.
Yes, the rooster would wake you up in the morning. Yeah, the rooster was loud. Amazing.
You can hear the chickens even in the day sometimes.
It's amazing. I moved to like Ferndale, which is where we do the show now, and it was like moving out to the country.
Yeah.
I live a block from Woodward Avenue, the biggest street in Detroit,
right.
And yet it's like the fucking quiet of the, you know, it's like living on a farm here. It's amazingly quiet.
You're like a 5-minute walk from downtown Ferndale,
right. There's a,
and all these bars. Yeah.
There's a train block one way, and there's a giant 6-lane avenue the other way, but it's still way more quiet than living in Hamtramck.
Compared to where you used to live.
Which is amazing. Yeah, that's how bad it was.
Hamtramck's like the old world.
It's
several old worlds.
Yeah,
at once,
it's like the fucking Depression. It's like 1920s.
Well, Hamtramck used to be like heavily Polish, like 65-70% Polish.
Yeah.
Now that's dwindled to like 20%, something like that.
Yeah.
And now that's been filled in with like a Crayola box.
Yes.
Of Arabic,
Pakistani,
Bangladeshi. Like all kinds of people.
Serbians, yeah, Albanians.
So you've got like a weird mix. You've got like weird Eastern Europeans and then like weird Asians. And like it's like a whole polyglot now.
Yeah. So anyway, we're going back to the All Access. Did you want to go back to that?
Yes.
Again?
All right.
You were saying.
There was like calls for a talk radio, sports radio.
It was sports
was
radio.
Was it AM still at the time?
It might have been the AM sports station. Yeah. I think it was. Yeah.
And we did like demos.
On cassette tapes.
Yeah.
On a 4-track recorder that we dubbed down to a cassette, and sent those in, and those went nowhere. And
we did pioneer the bit, NHL forward or Serbian war criminal.
It was NHL player convicted war criminal. Was that on the pod? Was that on the demo?
I believe that was on one of our demos.
It was on one of the later demos for sure, when the radio station actually had interest.
And
in
I think we did it. On
we probably
the
did
air.
It on the show, and I think we did it in the studio too at 97.1. But so anyway, that whole story is up on All Access, and you can hear about. You know, like I was asked, you know, how much does podcasting help your stand-up career? And I said, career? Not really.
Right.
But I think it helps your writing in a sense, because you're talking in a funny way off the top of your head. I think it helps, you know.
Well, it certainly, I wish.
You've come up with bits out of this show that you do on stage.
I should probably listen back to the show more often. And like
you would get better bits.
Yeah. No, because I do come up with stuff on here. And they're totally different disciplines.
Exactly. So I don't know that. And I also mentioned that, you know, geographically, it's hard to blow up as a stand-up from a podcast because people are listening everywhere and you're not really touring everywhere. You know, people are listening to us in Australia, in England, in places, and it's like, we're never going to play there.
Well,
you know, but people do come out to shows from the podcast.
In a weird
way. But it's not as many as you'd think.
In a weird way, I don't know if it helps. What it does is it builds a little audience for you. A
little bit.
Not for us, but for successful people.
Guys like Marin and Bill Burr and Adam Carolla have certainly made the podcast, you know, something that they can build an audience from. But those guys were all famous before their podcast. You know, Marin did, 50 spots on Letterman before he ever did a podcast?
Yeah,
so,
Marin was like the most famous unknown guy.
Yeah,
like,
he was on Air America.
He was just under the surface of being known.
So I mean, in a way, like, I think a podcast is something where you can sort of take all of your fans from little disciplines, little TV spots or guesting on sitcoms or whatever, and sort of bring them all together. But I think from ground zero, I don't think a podcast is a really great way to build a fan base, because there's just way too many fucking shows now.
Well, there's no way to commodify or
there's that too.
Decide There's no. The audience will pick shows that they like. It's just like, look, there's all these people on YouTube that are making money.
Yes.
And how exactly that happens is there's no science to it.
Well, there
some people get popular,
some people get it, and some
and
don't
go viral.
But YouTube is what podcasting was in like 2006. I think in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I think YouTube. What's going to happen is that when the big, you know, that's the thing. The reason YouTube can flourish is because the big studios, the big, production companies haven't figured out that that's an audience that you can really use. You know, they're locking all of their stuff up in networks. They're locking it up with streaming services. And YouTube themselves, you know, YouTube has tried to bring in people and give them money to do channels, but it hasn't really worked for them. But I think what's going to happen with YouTube is eventually that the small fries, the guys working out of their houses, are going to start to get pushed out by some of the commercial thing. And that's what's happened in podcasts.
Well, it happens everywhere.
Yeah, it happens everywhere.
That's the inevitable cycle. Mm-hmm. We used to have local radio.
Yeah.
There was a thing on the local PBS station the other night.
Yeah.
That was a tribute to J.P. McCarthy.
J.P. McCarthy.
And this was the most...
The voice of
sanguine,
WJR.
Bleary-eyed, syrupy remembrance of a guy who's been dead for 20 years.
Yes.
J.P. McCarthy dropped dead 20 years ago. He had like some weird blood cancer and like went quick.
Yeah.
You know, just went quick. Hasn't been on the air for 20 years. And Frank Beckman and all these guys were on there talking about how wonderful. Well, that's all gone.
Yeah.
The like local legend, hero.
Right. Yeah.
Radio guy. The size of their.
Yeah. I got to meet Dick Purton a couple months ago, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He came to Comedy Castle and I got to talk to him for a minute.
Dick Purton was
legend. Legendary morning.
Dominant.
Guy.
Now, if you listen to Dick Purton now, if you ever listen to tapes of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Well,
Purton's people. I mean,
but it was you know, he was doing a lot of like local, like he was making fun of Coleman Young and stuff, which at the time was edgy because no one was, you know, it was
in the,
you know,
like 70s. He was like a rock disc. He was like a rock disc doc jockey.
Well, he was more of a top 40 guy later in his career. I mean, CKLW was a pop station, which is where he started. And then when he went over to whatever, I forget the call letters, 90, I think it was 95.5 is where he, wasn't that where he
Q95,
was?
Q95, yeah.
Q9, and then he went over 104.3.
He bounced
eventually
around a couple stations.
But yeah, but I mean, I think he always was pop, you know.
But
I don't know,
like
was,
in the 60s.
He was like a Cousin Brucey type,
rock
I guess.
DJ, right. Yeah. And then his show, he became more of a morning show. Anyway, that's for baby.
Those guys are done.
That was never for me, but.
No.
But Dick Burton was star.
When I was seven and my mom would listen to that in the
you
car,
it was funny, yes.
I was like, well, Dick Burton's funny. There's a guy to look up to. There's a guy I'd like.
Right, right. And then
a guy I'd like to hang out
and
with.
And then you developed your own taste.
Well, then you
remember seeing. No, I remember seeing that we saw Dick Burton.
Yeah.
There was like a deli on 9 Mile.
Yeah.
It's not there anymore.
Right.
And we saw him in there one day.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, it was like the Pope had come in and ordered a pastrami.
Well, those guys own the city.
Yeah.
You know, those local broadcasters were the kings of the world.
Right. And you know, the studio is over here in Ferndale.
Mm-hmm.
So I bet Dick Purton came into that deli once or twice a week.
Yeah.
And the guys behind the counter knew him. Yeah. Wasn't a big deal. But we were like, holy shit, Dick Purton's here.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. So anyway, so All Access Magazine, if you want to go read that, I'll put the link on there. You can find out about the history of podcasting
from my perspective. Author?
A guy named Seth Ressler is the guy who did that. So Seth is a guy who has his own podcast, who used to be a disc jockey and is now a wannabe comedian. That's how I met Seth. Well, but yeah, you know.
But we need another mouth to feed. thanks, Seth.
Yeah, thanks, Seth. I put you over pretty good.
Yeah,
in there.
I was waiting.
I was nervous to send it to you because you know, I did this. I didn't really tell you I was doing it.
No,
it's fine. I made sure to talk about you a lot. And
I was waiting for an excuse to rip it apart and be like, well, there you go. Yeah, you go again.
I was dishonest or something.
No, it was nothing.
I was not dishonest.
There was really not anything I could quibble with.
No, it was fine. Yeah. It was, you know, it's my story, but, you know, you're in there. And,
well, you know.
And that's fine. All right, let's move on then. Do you want to talk about...
You didn't mention our wonderful, our 97.1 experiment where we were, for months, we were in preparation and in development.
Well, we hired a manager to represent us.
But like even from the point where we contacted the station, they then took a couple months to put us on the air.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then like we got on, and then the station flipped formats.
Like, that was the thing. It took 8 months to get physically into the studio and do a show, and then it took them about 10 days to go, yeah, we got a new program director. Fuck off.
Right. The guy who hired us. Goodbye.
Well, not only did they, you know, after we did our weekend, and that guy, by the way, the thing about doing that was like, not only did we do the weekend, but we did well enough to be invited back to the station.
Yeah.
So we found this out in the paper that like, oh, they're switching formats, they're firing everybody, well, the program director's out.
They didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, so no one really told us we didn't get the job.
We knew it.
You
know, we were guys who did a couple trials and stuff.
Yeah.
So we were lowest on the totem pole.
But I mean,
the top guys at the station didn't know.
Right, that's what I mean. But I mean, they fired their morning guy, so we had no shot, you know. And then it's like not only that, they actually closed the physical building.
Right.
And moved cuz you know, later our manager took a new demo over to the station,
gone.
And that guy had no interest, and so you know that was it. It was over.
Well, the
the dream. But again, I put that in there.
They told the afternoon guys who were top rated at the time. You can go to the mornings or go out. It was like radio's a horrible business.
But that's the interesting thing about podcasting is that as much as you know, we were trying to get into radio. All we want to do is get into radio. If we could just get into radio, now it's radio guys doing podcasting. It's the complete opposite direction.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, now we're on the right side of it, at least. You know,
well, Adam Carolla was the big tipping point because he had a big morning show in L.A., and that station was like, "Let's go to all hits." That's the crazy thing. Carolla had a successful morning show in L.A.
And even he couldn't make it.
And it was syndicated. He was one of the Stern replacements.
Yeah.
And he was doing well.
Well,
and the station said, we don't want to pay you.
The other thing, too, and it's also the thing that bit us, is what bit Adam Carolla, was the format that we liked doing, the all-talk, you know, free-form stuff,
hot talk.
You know, after Howard left terrestrial radio, they tried it with Carolla and David Lee Roth and a Rover and some of these guys that took those morning spots. And, you know, it never really worked, and the format died. And it never came back. You know, now you can get that stuff on Sirius, or now you can get that stuff on a podcast. Right. But you couldn't...
Podcasts have taken the form of that. The only benefit that Hot Talk had was daily... Well, sports radio has morphed a little bit. Where it's now guy talk, where they don't talk just about... Yeah. You know, what's Verlander's ERA going to be this year?
By the way, I've got 75 of those on television now. Did you know that you can watch any of, like, Rich Eisen is on television. Dan Patrick is on television.
Right, they've just
Dan Levitard is on television. Right. Who's the other guy? Colin Cowherd. He just left ESPN. He is now on television. He
was Mike.
And now they're all doing television as well. It's amazing. You turn on in the afternoon, there's 50 of those.
Scott
fucking,
Van Pelt.
There's a million like radio shows on television.
Where is the Fabulous Sports Babe?
You know what? Why is she not laying here right now with us? I mean, I'm kidding.
You need to put some slats under this.
Reinforce the studio.
Do you have some 4x8s?
She was a hot act for a minute. I don't know where she went.
Hot act.
I'll
tell you what. I have been tormented by this, and my friend Roger and I will sing this to each other once in a while.
What's that?
Every week on that show, every Tuesday, they had a theme music, and it was like tropical music underneath it. And it was like, it's Tuesday on the Babe Show. We jamming.
Oh.
It's Tuesday on the Babe. And I've been trying to find a clip of that for years.
I wouldn't know, but
there you go.
If you want to call and talk, just 1-800-SAY-BABE.
Yeah.
That was the phone number. Well, was it one of Hey Babe? Was it Hey Babe?
I think it was Hey Babe. And then Tony Bruno was on after her.
Well.
Memories of 90s sports talk radio.
All right. Well, let's move on. Do you want to talk about
JT the Brick? Get a little bit of JT the Brick in there. He's still on. He's still on, by the way.
This is a sad death for me. Big Beatles fan. George Martin dead.
Yeah.
Beatles producer died at 90. Hard to be sad for a guy that lives to 90. And had a fabulous life.
Had, like, the best life ever.
The best life of all time. Yeah. But George Martin, you want a little... I put together a George Martin retrospective.
Did you?
It's about 4 to 5 hours long. I hope you're ready for it. Okay. But we're going to start with the very first Beatles album. We'll listen to that whole thing, and then we'll go from there. So,
well, George Martin was at EMI.
Yeah, well, I'll get to that whole history. But if you don't know, here's some of his Beatles contributions, his finest Beatles contributions here. First, start off with this one. Here you go.
It's been a hard
day. Now, I know you're going, why a hard day's night? That opening chord, which is not only George Harrison on guitar, it's George Martin on piano. The opening chord of Hard Day's Night. A lot of people don't know that. Here it is again. See, that's piano and guitar together. A lot of people, for years, they couldn't figure out what chord that was, the musicologists. And then they found out.
The musicologists.
That studied the Beatles were like, what chord is George Harrison playing? And it turns out that it's a piano underneath the guitar played by George Martin that gave that unique sound to that one. So that's great. And, of course, he did all of the strings on the Beatles albums with a couple of exceptions. But most of the strings, if you ever hear a string arrangement on a Beatles song, it was written and conducted by George Martin, Eleanor Rigby.
Look at all the lovely people.
Beautiful stuff.
Eleanor
classically
Rigby
trained.
Picks up the rice in the
And then, of course, it was his idea to take Paul McCartney's acoustic ballad and put a string quartet behind it. The most covered song in all of popular music, Yesterday.
Now it looks as though they're here to stay.
The strings come in a second. We'll respect. Here it comes.
Suddenly,
there it is. That's his innovation right there.
I'm not half the man I used to be.
So good, so good. And of course.
And then, of course, when Phil Spector came in and put strings on it.
Well, that was
he
terrible.
He jacked it up.
He jacked it up. Your Let It Be is a disaster. That if you get, I listen to Let It Be Naked.
That's
generally
the one
speaking.
I like.
Yeah, that one's a better version of it. And Phil Spector ruined it. But here he is, played piano on a lot of Beatles stuff. Here he is on Long Tall Sally. This is a boogie woogie piano. George Martin doing his best Little Richard. So lots of stuff that he did for the Beatles. He was really the fifth Beatle when it came to the studio, I think. I think that's safe to say. You know, here's I'm gonna fast forward.
I thought that was Eddie Murphy.
What?
So that was Eddie Murphy was the fifth Beatle.
The fifth Beatle.
Remember that sketch? I'm old.
No, I don't know.
There was an Eddie Murphy SNL sketch where he was like Clarence Clemens Decker, whatever.
Okay.
And he was like basically, the Beatles cut him out of all the records.
Oh, okay.
He played harmonica.
Oh, okay. Well,
and it would just, he put harmonica tracks on the back of the Beatles.
I'm
and was
not
like,
aware of that.
George, Ringo, you got ass kickings coming to you.
And they very famously played the piano solo in My Life. Let's listen
what
to
does
that.
It make Billy Preston? The sixth Beatle, seventh Beatle?
Listen how good that is. Now, he played that at half speed, and they sped it up for the record. So anyway, George Martin, one of the greats. Do you want to know what he did before the Beatles?
Go ahead.
He ran Parlophone Records, which is a division of EMI, mm-hmm. and they weren't doing rock music. In fact, very few people were doing rock music back in England in the 60s, in the early 60s. But he was doing a lot of these, and these, you know, it's funny, when I read the book Tune In, which is Mark Lewisohn's giant Beatles biography that only part one has been released of, mm-hmm. that ends in 1962. That is mm-hmm. 800 pages and ends in 1962. There's a lot about the early George Martin here. So here's some. Here's one of the things he did very early on, which you've maybe never heard these, but you can hear a lot of the qualities that would go into the Beatles music, and it's all real catchy. You know, this
is the doctor. I'm in trouble.
Well, goodness gracious.
Sophia Loren and Peter Sellers.
Yes.
Well, he did. You've heard this.
The Goons, right?
Yeah. Well, he didn't actually do The Goons, but he did Spike Milligan and Peter Sellers separately.
The guy's from The Goons, yes.
But this is a real catchy record, and this was something he did in, I think, the late 50s.
Well, goodness gracious me.
But you hear the
how often
the different instrumentation and stuff that, you know, he would be known for.
When did the trouble start?
Listen to this. Here's Rolf Harris, who is an Australian guy. And the popularity of Australian pop songs. Those were produced by George Martin. This is great, though. When you listen to this, it's like this is an outstanding record. I'm not saying it's a Beatles record, but, it, you know, this is a big hit.
I don't think I've ever heard this.
Well, it was a big hit in England. But you've heard Timey Kangaroo Down? Same guy. But you hear the didgeridoo there? That's George Martin doing it.
Listening to this stuff, you can kind of realize why people flipped the hell out when the Beatles came out.
Yeah, but you also hear the elements of this that the Beatles took from, hey, let's not just be two guitars, a bass, and drums, and let's do some different stuff. Yeah. And Martin had the experience of doing that. This next thing I'm going to play.
I mean, so when it was Matt Monroe and Balladeers, and it was Skiffle with Lonnie Donegan and
stuff. He did all that
stuff. You can see how the Beatles would excite people.
But this next thing is one of my favorite things ever. I actually considered covering this in my actual comedy show. Not that anyone would get it, but it's a funny song. This is a Cockney classic called Hole in the Ground by Bernard Cribbins. And you can hear a lot of this stuff that would end up in, kind of Sgt. Pepper's. It's all on this. Listen to this.
There I was, a-digging his hole in the ground, so big and sort of round it was, and there was I, digging it deep. It was flat at the bottom, and the sides were steep. Went along comes this bloke in a bowler, which he lifted and scratched his head. Whoa, we looked down the hole, pulled him into
sight,
and he said, do you mind if I make a suggestion? Don't dig it there, dig it elsewhere. You're digging.
But when you hear something like the benefit
be
being
square,
for the benefit of Mr. Kite or Lovely Rita, like it's all in.
Can't put a hole where a hole don't belong.
Bernard Cribbins is a great character actor. And Whovians, if you're a Dr.
Oh, Hoover, Bernard Cribbins was on that?
He played Rose's grandfather.
He's great.
And he was on Dr. Who.
Here's some other George Martin. You might not know this was George Martin. Here you go. Listen to this. Everyone knows this.
Yeah.
Goldfinger. George Martin did this. It was really good. And how about this? How about this, a little Alfie?
What's it all about, Alfie?
More George Martin.
Yeah.
Is it just...
How about the Liverpool rivals?
When you...
Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Through a storm.
It's George Martin on piano.
Hold your hand up.
You know, this is the theme of...
I don't think I've heard this one either.
This is the theme of Liverpool FC. This is what they sing. Before every Liverpool match, is this version of "You'll Never Walk Alone"?
Is it this version?
Yeah. Well, they're from Liverpool. They were the big Liverpool.
Yeah. I know this is their song. Yeah. I hear the crowd sing it.
This is also Jerry Lewis's theme song from the telethon.
There's a goal.
And then later in the 70s, he found his new Beatles. Do you know who the new Beatles were that George Martin found? The three multi-instrumentalists and vocalists.
We'll
play it for you here. They never really quite lived up to the billing, but I like this. This is a good tune. America. This is Tin Man by America. This is a good song. I listened to this a lot last night when I was researching these, but yeah.
Sometimes late when things are real.
And it's got that, it's got that sound, man. He had a sound. Love it. It's a good song. Although it does remind me of being in the back seat of my parents' car.
That is so,
listening to AM
so
radio.
70s.
And what about this one? Here's another. This is probably their more famous song, Sister Golden Hair.
This I love.
This is good. Yeah.
I don't know why I love this, but
well, this is But this sounds like the Eagles, though, too, in its own
I know,
way.
And I hate the fucking Eagles.
Well, I tried to
maybe it's
it
the George Martin touch that you
I
like.
Well, you know what this sounds like? Well, George Harrison sounds like he could have done this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, George Martin only really ever worked after the Beatles with Ringo on Sentimental Journey, which was Ringo's standards record. That was done right at the end of the Beatles. And then he did stuff with McCartney. And I've got some of that. Listen to this. I mean...
When you were young,
George Martin producing. Listen to that. And again, you've got the strings, you've got all those elements that he was so good at.
John probably could have used his help on some stuff later on.
What about... Come on, Corey.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
Joel Radio here for you. Get your morning drive going. Paul McCartney, Michael Jackson getting together. George Martin producer.
You know, the synthesizer. Is
yeah,
the
this does sound dated, but.
80s production is so bad.
It really is bad. The 70s. But, you know, they had this new technology. They wanted to use it in the 80s.
And goddamn did they use it.
And they sure did. But this still sounds good, though. I mean,
if you want to hear some bullshit, listen to the soundtrack of Fletch.
Oh, yeah?
That is all keyboard. It's all electronic. It's not one real instrument used anywhere. So bad.
Time for our duet, Corey. Live together in perfect.
Maybe it's better to burn out than to fade away.
Well, look, I mean, that was a giant hit.
It was.
It was a giant hit. So he had a hell of a career, George Martin. As big as you get. He built his own studios.
Yes.
Air. He actually left. A lot of people don't realize this. He actually quit EMI, I believe, around the Rubber Soul time. And the Beatles insisted he still be the producer. So he actually wasn't cut in on those early Beatle records. He was working for a salary for EMI when he did all that British Invasion stuff. And it was only later that when he quit, became an independent producer, and the Beatles insisted that he still be their producer, and then started sharing in the profits of the Beatle records. Thank God. It was a hell of a business move. Also ran off with a secretary. His wife for many years was a secretary.
Hey, why not?
The secretary. And he had Air Studios, and as we were talking on the phone, Air Studios were destroyed in a hurricane. You were talking about in Montserrat.
I thought there was some kind of political unrest or something.
You know what? I don't know. They might have had that too, but there was a hurricane that destroyed the studios. So anyway, George Martin dead. What a life, though, man. What a guy. And his son Giles does all the Beatles stuff now. All the remixing and all the new Beatles projects are done by his son Giles. So that's a nice story. Gotta love George Martin.
A good man, but why did he name a child Giles?
Big. He was known as Big George. There was George and Big George.
Well,
and
sure.
He was Big George. And, of course, he signed the Beatles.
That was mostly for the girth of his cock. It was like a can of beans. It was thick.
Well, he was a big, tall man, I think. I mean, he could have very well been a...
Just about his girth.
Very well could have been a coxman. Who knows? I mean... Certainly had no problem getting women. I mean,
good on you, George.
Yeah,
class act.
Would not have And if you want to listen to the Beatles Decca audition, okay, which was done roughly about a year before, actually less than that, probably 10 months before the Beatles did Let Me Do George Martin. He really made a big difference. You know, he really was the fifth Beatle because he's the musician that appears on more Beatles records than any other. Some people say, you know, it's Billy Preston. Some people say it's Murray the K. Some people say...
Fuck Murray the K.
Yes, we can agree on fuck Murray the
fuck
K.
Fuck that garbage.
The guy who really was the fifth Beatle, personality-wise, and in terms of who was in their gang...
Klaus Voormann?
...was Neil Aspinall.
Oh, yeah.
And who ended up being the running Apple Records and stuff. But as far as musically, George Martin really was the fifth Beatle. That is, when you listen to the Beatles... You're hearing the work of George Martin.
Well, it's not surprising he kept working with McCartney because I think he probably... McCartney was probably the most musically sound and advanced.
They were probably more on the same page than some of the other guys. And
well,
the other guys always thought that... the Beatles for a while did not think that their record sounded good. You know, and that's when Jeff Emerick came in on Revolver, that the sound changed. The bass got better because they were listening to Motown. They were listening to some of these, you know, Stax and some of these things and going, we want our records to sound like that.
We want our records to sound like that.
Yeah, and so they had to do some, you know, they with engineer Jeff Emerick and George Martin. All right, enough Beatles.
Beatles talk.
All right, enough Beatles
Joel, talk. The circuit tripped in Joel's head, and we're going to be here all week.
Well, if you want to listen to any of these, I mean, listen to America. There's some good stuff. He did a lot of their big hits. And, of course, the Beatles. Just listen to the Beatles. You're hearing it all there. It's great. Another guy who died, a comic named Alan Ball died, Corey.
Yeah, well, a slightly lower profile.
Low profile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In fact, he's the equivalent of a third-rate Beatles cover band that you see in a bar in Wixom. Of his career. But not to piss on the dead, Alan Ball. Let me ask you a question about Alan Ball here. Just in general, Corey, tell me if this is ironic or not, because maybe I don't know. Is it ironic that a comedian who goes over his time every single show dies young? Is there irony in that, Corey? Is there?
Well, maybe.
I didn't like this guy. And
I never.
You didn't know the guy.
I never met him, so this is all. But I would look. You know, no one enjoys shitting on the dead.
No, I don't
want to
shit on the dead, but fuck this guy. He's dead. Goodbye.
There was a certain comedian whose name was Chrissy Burns. And the day that she died, I happened to be with another comedian who I will leave innocent in this. But we were working on something.
Yeah.
And the day she died, our phones both kept blowing up. And the meanest jokes in the world were said. And
yes.
You know what? She kind of deserved it.
She
made some false claims.
Well, look, Chrissy,
and you know, she was kind of disreputable.
I actually liked Chrissy Burns.
A lot of people liked her.
The problem I have with this Alan Ball guy is this guy, when I was a young comic and I was a new comic, he was such a dick to me when I was emceeing because he would run over his time. I did a thing where, like, the feature when we were working together was doing the Tonight Show. So the feature was doing the Tonight Show like the following Wednesday or something. And the feature had forgot to mention that to the audience. So I went up at the end of the show as I'm closing the show. As I've already given up for the headliner, I said, hey, let's not forget that our feature tonight, Michael Jr. I don't know if you know Michael Jr., but I said, Michael Jr. is going to be on the Tonight Show this week, so make sure to catch that. And thanks for coming out to Joey's Comedy Club. Good night.
He was mad at the plug at the end.
He pulled me aside and said, how dare you plug the feature after my show?
Yeah.
And I go, well, it's everybody's show. It's not just your show.
They grow up.
And, you know, he was running over his time every night. He was a real pain in the ass to work with. You know, he's one of those guys, and this is why I don't like this guy. And this is why there's another guy in comedy that I won't mention his name, but you know who he is.
Oh, I'll guess.
Who when I don't, please don't guess, because you know who it is. There's no need to put this out there publicly. This guy's dead. I'm going to shit on him a little bit. Who really would want to make me quit comedy. You know, that was their goal, was to make the other comics miserable.
Yeah.
And when I was starting out, there were guys that would try to do that to you, who would just want to make you miserable and you'd tell you sucked and that. And Alan Ball was one of those guys. And I think that's the dickiest thing you can ever do to a comedian.
I'll be honest.
And yeah, young comics have thin skin. I get that. And I probably did back then when we worked together. But you know what? I never, ever forgot that. This guy is the example that you should not lead. You know, this is the example of bad headliner behavior that I teach to my comedy class. When I go, headliners are going to be dicks to you, so you better get it right. You better say what they want you to say because they're assholes, some of them. And this guy was the biggest asshole that I ever worked with. I don't know what happened to him. I'm guessing he would have been in his 50s, maybe, late 50s, Alan Ball. But I'm not sad that he's dead. He wasn't a nice guy.
Wow.
So, see ya.
You know, I never worked with him, I don't think. I can't remember. Maybe I did.
You would have he would have been such an ass, you couldn't forget him. I mean, that's the thing. You know, you see these generic milquetoast headliners that talk about how bad everyone's driving, and I thought 75 meant that was the speed limit, or, you know, I'm on 996, and I'm, you know, and all these stupid hack jokes. But this guy really would have stood out for being an asshole. You would not have forgotten this guy, Corey, trust me. Yeah. You would not have liked him. He was a prick.
Well, I got to say, personally, I know that I have not been as friendly or nice.
People may say that about you.
A lot of open micers and young comics. But I feel like I always made that choice based on my own personal, like, I didn't do it out of dickiness.
Yeah.
There's been people who I don't think are any good.
Yeah.
And I might have been, and I regret being an asshole.
Yeah.
I don't regret making a critical decision and a choice. Well, I don't feel wrong about I can't think of anybody that I was like, this guy's garbage, who's then proved me wrong.
Well, I mean, that's a different thing.
And I've generally been very nice to people who I think have talent.
The guy, it was such a jerk that it's, you know, it wasn't about his act. First of all, I can't remember his act.
I'm sure it was mediocre.
I'm sure his act was good enough to headline, you know, a small club. But the guy never became a star. And you know, part of it is you got to be a good guy. You know, part of becoming a star, though, and part of success, and I you know, you learn this over the years, is that it's not a meritocracy. Show business is not a meritocracy. That sometimes people, you know, get gigs just because they're good guys and they're friends with other people.
Sure.
And while we go, oh, that's unfair, when it happens to you, you know, you look, you're getting gigs not that you're a bad comic, but there are guys who you are personal friends with. And when they have gigs, they call you,
right.
not because you're America's greatest comedian, Corey Hall, because you're their friend. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But
yeah, that's how it works.
So when you're a dick, you know, I'll never forget the guys that were a dick to me when I was coming up.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the years.
And believe me, there's plenty of them.
You know, and I wouldn't even say that. You know, there was a guy that ran
some of those guys are gone.
Well, there was a guy that ran an open mic who would have preferred me to quit comedy. Mm-hmm. And then there was this guy. And aside from them, I'm not really, you know, look, there's divas who come into Comedy Castle. There's, you know, guys from the Gathering of the Juggalos that I worked with who were a pain in the ass. But for some reason, I can relate to that and understand that at least a little bit now. But with this guy, he was completely out of line. I never liked him, and fuck him.
All right.
There you go.
You know, there's like obvious lunatics.
Yes.
Okay. And those are people we all know. Mm-hmm. And they often have puppets or whatever. And there's like obvious lunatic gimmick acts. And I always shun them and turn my back on them because I know it's just not going to work. But then there's a whole class of guys that are like Bob and Tom.
Well, yeah, we're thinking of the same guy, I think, too. I guess I won't shed any tears when he's dead either, that guy.
Yeah, well,
you know, but
that's not just one guy that refers
but we know
to,
a
but
guy, yeah.
There's a lot of these, and the older I get, the more I do have respect for how hard this shit is.
There's a guy,
you know, you're doing a gig in Coldwater, Michigan, and there's another guy there, and you're like, well, this guy's an asshole. And then you realize he had to drive all the way to Coldwater, Michigan.
Yeah.
And he's been in it longer than I have.
Yeah.
And once you've been in it a long time and you realize how thankless a lot of this job is, you have a little more respect. But some guys are medium talent or no talent. And that, okay, what I have found is that in maybe one or two rare exceptions, the bigger the talent, the nicer the guy.
No, that's true. It's easier to get along,
Right?
Yeah, the guys who suck are insecure because they know they suck. And they know that you know that they suck. And that's the thing that you run into a lot
and
with
guys. And I know that you know that they know that I know that you suck.
Yeah, but right. you know that you suck. And so, and you know that they don't respect them.
Right.
And so that happens. But here's the thing that happens in comedy, a little bit tangent from this, that I found, and I was just thinking about, you know, young comics and people putting up all these, you know, all the young, your favorite thing on Facebook, the young comedian status about how they had such a great time and how they have to thank everybody. And there's a point in comedy, and this is a very important stage that everybody goes through. And certainly you and I are way past this point. But there's a point when comedy stops being an emotional thing and becomes work, and it becomes a clinical thing, and it stops being a celebration, and it becomes more of, well, that's just what you do is go up and tell the jokes. And I think that's important for comedians. I think that, you know, what you see a lot of times with people is that when that happens to them, when there's no longer the high of, oh, this group of strangers really likes me, when that goes away, that people quit a lot of times. When it becomes a routine, when it becomes something that you do every night. But
I always say that you turned it into a job faster than anybody I know.
Well, here's the thing.
You were bitching about gigs early on and had little emotional connection.
No, that's not true. I always had fun doing
it. I did the road and then started to say,
well, first
why
all,
am I in a,
I did the road 10 times the road gigs you did, though. I mean, really.
More,
I mean, at least before I left the road to work at Comedy Castle, I was on the road a fucking lot. It was the only job I had. I was on the road, I don't want to say every week, but 3 out of 4 weeks, I was doing something on the road. Not necessarily staying overnight, but going, you know, driving to places. And
right. Well,
so I was on the road. Those gigs suck. Those gigs will make you want to quit
comedy.
You're
like in a Days Inn in Iowa.
And
you go, why am I doing this?
So you do those and you just go, but there is a sense that, you know, there is a point when you're like, okay, but I'm good, you know? And that is a turn that people have to understand is that, you know, when you're good enough, I think that's when you're really a good comic. When there's no emotional attachment to the thing, but you can go out and do it well and make people laugh, I think that's when you're good, you know? And I think that people that do it just for that purpose of, I don't care if anyone pays me, I just want to do it because it's fun. Mm-hmm. I think when you get over that, that's when you really become a professional.
Well, there's some maniacs out there that are like, why would I ever take money for this?
Oh, I'm God.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
What are
you,
fucked in the head?
Yeah.
Like, Those kids make me nuts.
Well, you know.
There are certain, and there's also people that are in it because it's a social group.
Yeah.
And that I don't really, I never.
There's that.
I have plenty of friends. I have plenty of, you know, I have a stable of close friends in comedy that I talk to every week.
Yeah.
But it's not like all of the people I know.
Yeah.
I had plenty of friends before I did comedy that have nothing to do with each other from different walks of life and areas. And, you know, I'll be okay if I never talk to another. Well,
the thing is, too, is, you know, you'll mention this and not just you, but, you know, boy, the open micers are real assholes now. I hear that not just from you, but from other people. Like, boy, these open micers are assholes. And here's my point. I think they were always assholes. I think when I started the open micers.
Sure.
Now, there were guys like you and guys like Derek Stefariak and some of these guys that I Rob Little and some of these guys that I took to and became friends with. But think about the guys when we started out. There was a fucking shit ton of schmucks around back then. And there's a bunch of schmucks now. Yeah. And I think with the prevalence of the internet and the way comedy's kind of been, you know, now anyone can do it and you're on Twitter and you're writing jokes, it makes you a comedian now. I think there's more now, but I don't think there were any percentage-wise. I think there were every bit as many schmucks back then.
I certainly think, look, there was, you know, when I started, there was like the last dying embers of the like comedy boom.
Yes.
Early 90s, 80s guys.
Yeah.
And there were some of these older dudes that were really blown out and bitter and had been doing it for a long time. But they'd also had gone through a point where it was a business.
Yeah.
Where it was a real business. And so they had every reason to be bitter.
Yeah.
And they were like, who are these kids coming up? That's how it works in comedy.
Yeah, it is. But
I'm the old man. What cracks me up is when I started doing comedy, people were like, well, that Corey's crazy and he's on the edge. I was doing open mics and doing wild stuff. And like now there's kids who look at me like this old fucking hack.
Yeah. Well,
and you go, Jesus, you don't even know the hacky acts I was working with.
The part of the problem now is that the barrier to entry in comedy no longer exists. There used to be a thing where you used to have to go and, you know, beg people for stage time and wait all night at an open mic and this kind of stuff. And now it's like, oh, I go, I make a flyer, I put it on Facebook and I run my own show after doing it for 3 months, which those things really didn't exist then. You know, it was tough to get stage time and it was tough to become a working comic. And in a way, with the death of the clubs, which we've noticed, at least on, you know, on the local level, the clubs going away has made
I think that's fairly common in a lot of places.
Yeah. It's made comedy harder to make money at. And so people can't expect to make money because, we're going to work clubs? There's not any clubs. Well, there's one club. There's two clubs.
What happened is all the B... All the B and C clubs left.
Yeah.
So there's still some A clubs in every town. There's one. There's usually one or two A clubs.
Well, I would do literally, you know, when they talk about the circuit, I was emceeing about 5 or 6 clubs every 5th or 6th week. Yeah. You know, I would go do one and then I'd go do the 5 other ones and then I'd go back to that one and do that. And I did that for a long time. You can't do that anymore.
You could do like 20 weeks a year without leaving town.
Yeah, you could do that. Sure.
Which, you know, that doesn't exist anymore.
So I think, in a way, I think that, I have more of an understanding now why comedy has become a bunch of guys making each other laugh more than what we wanted it to be, which was, I want to be a famous comedian on television. I want to be on The Tonight Show. I want to do those things.
Yeah.
Well, and it seems like that's kind of gone away as a goal.
On a certain level, it's great. I'm happy for the kids that are doing their own shows and they're doing these shows in recycling centers and basements.
Exactly,
and ice cream parlors. And
right, yeah.
I'm not making any of that up.
No, absolutely.
Living room.
I saw pictures from somebody's living room this weekend.
Yeah, they're literally doing living
room
shows.
I'll tell you what. It was not a bad lineup in that guy's living room, whoever that was. That was, you know.
Yeah.
I went like, well, shit, that's not a bad show.
And
you know,
and
for
I personally don't really want to be doing.
No, I don't want to do that either.
I don't want to be scooping ice cream and then doing a show.
No.
I feel bad shitting on some of that because it is an organic expression. They're doing fun stuff. They're having a good time with it. It's just not the business that I thought it was.
Well, yeah, it's Bush League stuff that. You're lowering yourself to do that. at this point. You are. I'm not saying we all are, but you are, and I would be, and you are.
Anybody who's been doing it for a long time.
So, yeah.
And that's the problem, though. You get in this business for a long time. You stop going to the open mics. You get a little detached from these guys that are coming up. And then, you know, this is a whole, it's a, anyway, it's like any business.
Well, you wouldn't, you know, your, what could be mistaken for assholery on your part, I think is a completely natural reaction to some of these gigs and some of the ways that comics are coming up nowadays and the shows that they're doing. Look,
when I hear guys getting into fights over living room shows and stuff, that just baffles me. And I just think you guys are being silly, but that's, they don't know what it was like 20 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it was like in 1985 when the business was really
popping. Yeah.
So it's a, you know, your perspective changes.
Well,
I'm sorry, Alan Ball was a dickhead.
He was a dick.
I would love to talk about what a dickhead Alan Ball. He had a head like a dick.
He was a big, giant, bald guy. Yeah, big.
But
giant.
I never personally met him.
Well, look,
so I don't.
When you're doing your job as an MC and you come off stage and this guy who's a much larger man than I am is sticking his finger in your chest, threatening you, you're going to remember that.
I got to say, you got more, I'm only an inch or two taller than you. I'm not much taller than you, but like, I didn't get as much of that.
I don't think Alan Ball was ever going to punch me.
You had
I didn't
a
really
guys
feel that.
Did.
I've had a couple guys punch me or almost punch me.
I've had less
of
that.
You've been punched by open micers when you,
there's been some attempts.
You've taken the microphone from a guy and had him freak out on you. That's never happened to me, but it's been in the back rooms of these comedy places.
Which, by the way, the kid was never seen again.
No, I understand that. But yeah, I've had people get angry with me. But anyway, let me quickly do this. If you want to know more about stand-up comedy, if you're a young stand-up comedian...
We made it sound so beautiful.
...and want to know more about my... And believe me, I'm not a vitriolic asshole about other people in comedy most of the time. I really, over 17 years of doing this, it'll be 17 years this fall for me doing it. I've enjoyed hanging out with most of the people that I have. I've enjoyed working with most of the people that I've met. I've worked with some of the most famous people to ever do this, and I've had a great time with some of them, and I enjoy what I do. But anyway, comedy class, the advanced comedy class at the Comedy Castle starts up again April 2nd, 2016. If you want to sign up for that, I ask that you have a year's worth of comedy experience, a seven-minute set, or have completed Comedy 101 with Bill Bouchard at the Comedy Castle. Those are sort of the prerequisites for the class. You can call 248-542-9900 and sign up. And I will tell you lots of stories like I did today.
How many slots
to make you a good comedian.
How many slots do you have in the class, and how many people are allowed? I mean, how many men?
Well, I just...
Spaces are available?
13, generally, because I like to have that number, so we do a big showcase at the end of the year, at the end of the class. And so 13 is that number. So I usually try to hold it to 13 because people ask a lot of questions. So there's a lot of Q&A and a lot of, if you have any questions about comedy, I'll answer those.
A lot of
but
TNA.
I'll tell you, the group that I just had did a great job. I got to tell you, those guys were amazing. So some really funny guys in the last group that I think you'll be seeing. And a lot of the guys that have gone through the class like last year, because I started teaching the advanced class about a year ago now at the Comedy Castle, where I took that over from Bill Bouchard, lightened his load a little bit. A lot of those guys are now the MCs on the weekend. They're getting their first shots at doing professional gigs, I'm proud of that. You know,
Brad Wenzel was one of Bill's students.
Yeah,
and now he's done Conan O'Brien, and he's doing great festival work, and he's going to be a big, talent.
No, some of my students are doing well too. So anyway,
Doing plugs,
you had a plug.
There is.
What are you doing?
I'll be doing there's a new room in town. We just talked about there's no clubs.
We did, yes.
But there is a new club.
Somebody's very stupidly throwing their money at a new comedy club.
Oh, now, hold on. I haven't been there yet. I'm looking forward to it.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know anything about it.
There's been kind of a vacuum on the east side of the Metro Detroit area. So there is the Shores Comedy Theater. Mm-hmm. And I will be over there. With our old buddy Bill Hildebrandt.
Yes, who you guys might know from the show.
Yes, which will
Bill's been on here many times.
That will be, March 25th?
Okay, so that's coming up.
26th, I think, are the dates.
It's Friday, Saturday night.
Yes. So.
How do they find out more about Shores Comedy Club?
There's a Facebook page, and you can go to Shores Comedy Theater. It's a brand new room. It just started.
Yeah, it's so, what I've heard. I have a little bit of knowledge about that place, yeah. actually. It's in a temporary location. It's in a
restaurant.
There
will be a big announcement coming.
And there will be a permanent location for it
yeah.
where it will be more of a standalone club. But right now it's in a restaurant. It's on the water. Out there and in St. Clair Shores. So it's a nice location to go. Have a nice dinner. Come go see Corey. Go see Bill. Certainly a fine comedy show. By the way, Bill Hildebrandt.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill Hildebrandt, nicest guy in comedy and has done lots of nice things for me. So I'm not here to just shit on Alan Ball.
But here's the thing about Bill Hildebrandt.
Complete opposite from Alan
Ball.
Well,
here's the thing about Bill Hildebrandt. A lot of people go, oh, well, Bill's an asshole, except that Bill's got me so much work and been a mentor and been cool. Bill's gruff.
Yes.
And bust your balls.
Yes.
And a lot of what I did, what I've done is kind of that. And I saw who could take a punch,
yeah.
which I always thought was necessity and not a physical punch.
Yeah.
Although
I've taken a couple.
yeah. Some of those have been applicable. But, you know, I always was trying. I always thought that's what comics were.
Yeah.
Maybe I got it wrong. And now maybe.
You find out some guys have a real thin skin and they're real assholes.
Well, if you got a thin skin, maybe not a good choice of a path.
Bill Hildebrandt taught me a lot about comedy. He really did. He was really
come see me and
really
Bill.
Did great things. I say he did great things for me, but he tried to do great things for me. I let myself and him down. But anyway, so that's coming up with Corey. Do you want to talk about, okay, we got a couple topics here. You know, I was watching Cannonball Run 2 yesterday, and I told Corey. And Corey, how long would you estimate it's been since you've seen Cannonball Run 2 with Burt Reynolds?
It's been a good 6-7 years at least. I mean, you know, maybe more.
Cannonball Run 2 came out in 1984. And I was starting to tell Corey, you know, some of the cast that were in this. Now, Cannonball Run was a big success. And I remember Cannonball Run being entertaining in its day. I would have been like 10 when that came out. But boy, this second one was a piece of shit. Do you want me to give you?
Okay, but this is a movie, by the way, which there's a certain nostalgia. I'm real critical of nostalgia and questioning nostalgia. Although there are some things I can't resist.
Yeah.
And you know, but when you really look at these things with the naked eye of clarity and your middle age,
right?
You will not hold up. They will not hold up.
Well,
I feel that talking about the Cannonball Run movies is going to be better than watching. And I'm real fired up. You were like, you mentioned Cannonball the other day, and I said, save it for the show.
Well, I believe Cannonball Run,
Now, let me see if I can, let's see how many I can guess who's in it.
Let me explain the background of Cannonball Run. There was, I believe it was a New York Magazine story about a real event called the Cannonball Run. And I've read that article. I read it somewhere, I think in a doctor's office or something. I remember reading this article about it, and it was fascinating. And then, of course, they made a movie. Hal Needham is the guy who directed this, who was like a stuntman.
He did like all these.
He
like,
did Smokey and the Bandit and Stroker Ace and some of these. Uh-huh. But Hal Needham did this and had Burt Reynolds. Okay, so I'm going to give you some of the cast here. Maybe you can. You don't know it. Okay, but okay. So there was. I didn't see him, but who would have played. Okay, so J.J. McClure, the star, Burt Reynolds. We know that.
Sure.
Who was his flunky sidekick comedy guy?
Dom DeLuise.
All
right, so they had. Now, the gimmick they had. There was another. There was like a more serious movie that was called the Gumball Rally, I think, which was the same that had David Carradine in it.
Yeah.
But Cannonball Run was they had a race from coast to coast, right?
Yes.
New York to Los Angeles.
In Cannonball Run 2, they race from California to Connecticut.
Okay.
Or from Vegas to Connecticut.
One, they go from New York to.
Okay,
LA?
So yeah, he was also known. He was also known as Captain Chaos.
Yes.
He would don become Captain Chaos.
All right. So.
I didn't watch all of Cannonball Run 2, so I can't answer all your questions.
But in Cannonball Run, it was Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, and they were in an ambulance.
Yes.
With Farrah Fawcett and Jack Elam.
Yes.
That was their gimmick, was that they just would turn the ambulance lights on to get
past
Jack the cops.
Elam was the drunken doctor.
Jack Elam was one of the great drunk character actors. Mm-hmm. He and Foster Brooks would just never seem to be anything but... Jack Elam was kind of cockeyed and weird looking.
Well, he's in Once Upon a Time in the West. He's the very famously the guy at the train station. Okay.
Okay.
Let me give you there was a Vegas contingent in there.
Yes.
And who would have played the character of Frank from the Vegas contingent.
What, Sinatra?
Yes, yeah. Frank Sinatra was in there, okay?
What's great about these is Sinatra doesn't
I'm
look
checking
like...
these off.
Okay.
As you so, get there's, them right.
So then you got like Sammy, okay, well, and, Sammy and Dean.
Sammy and Dean
around,
were
right?
those guys. Do you remember what their gimmick was in there?
They were sheiks?
They were priests. Well, they
oh, I'm
yeah,
getting the
they,
two movies confused.
Well, exactly, yeah. They also did different gimmicks, because I believe Bert and Dom went as military guys in this one, right?
They in, had the a tank, one, yes, in the second they, one, yes. They had okay. a, they had a Jeep or something.
Yeah, all right. Now,
and
who,
Mary Lou Henner was in the car
okay.
with them?
I'm going to ask you questions, and you answer them, okay?
Okay.
Please.
All right.
It's going to work better this way. Who played the sheik? He's an American comedy actor who has an Arabic...
yes.
He actually is an Arab in real life.
This is so sad how much about it this
it's
I remember.
Famous. He's
the
a famous...
Son, the son of Toledo, Ohio.
Yes.
The Tony Paco's endorsing Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr was
a
that
Lebanese
guy, no.
gentleman in real life.
Okay, now there was a tough moneylender who went and collected money from a character, a guy that... Again, you would know both of these guys. The guy... was called Don Cannelloni, was the guy who he was collecting from. Now, Don Cannelloni was a famous guy, almost more famous for game shows. Do you remember him? He was kind of he was known for game shows and...
shit, I haven't seen this
he was
while.
He would be known... He's not Italian at all, which is why I think it's
Bert
funny.
Bert Convy?
Don Cannelloni. It was Charles Nelson Reilly.
Charles Nelson.
Now, the guy who was collecting money from him... His name was in the movie was Jaime Kaplan.
Oh, God.
Now, this was a bald, tough guy actor who
yeah.
played Jaime
Telly
Kaplan.
Savalas.
Telly Savalas, of course. So,
yeah.
Now, Mary Lou Henner played a priest.
Okay.
Who I guess really wasn't a priest. And do you know who her sidekick was?
I mean, a nun.
A nun. That's right, a nun. And who was her sidekick who was also... Now, this was a more established female actress. Old Hollywood.
Oh, Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine, exactly, okay. Now, who were the hot chicks who drove the Lamborghini?
Now, was Shirley MacLaine supposed to be with Bert or with Dom DeLuise?
I don't know exactly.
She
See,
got
I didn't
a
watch
raw,
enough
She
of
got
this.
A raw deal on this.
I don't think anybody banged Dom DeLuise.
Which piece of ass would you want in that? Mary Lou or...
No, you would want Mary Lou. I think
Shirley MacLaine, okay. 5 years earlier, I would have taken.
Who were the two babes who drove the Lamborghini in the second movie? They were
right.
both very famous at the time,
this
70s,
is, okay.
80s.
Now, here's where...
Cheesecake actresses.
Right, here's where separating the movies gets hard.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's Adrienne Barbeau...
Yes.
...in the first one?
Yes, and I forget who the second one
Diane
was.
Diane Cannon?
It could have been Diane Cannon and Adrienne Barbeau, yeah.
Okay.
But in this one, now one of these actresses, very famous for a television show from around that time.
Suzanne Summers?
No. It was a car-based television show.
Heather Locklear?
It was a television show that was really a spinoff of Hal Needham movies, in a sense.
The Fall Guy?
No. It was Catherine Bach from
Catherine
Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard, okay.
And Susan Anton.
Susan Anton.
Was the other girl.
All right.
Okay. Now, who played the fisherman? See, this is three old-time showbiz guys who played the fishermen. You'll never remember this. Foster Brooks, Louis Nye,
yeah.
and Sid Caesar
yeah, they're all in
were
there.
The fishermen.
Yeah,
okay.
I said Foster Brooks.
Okay. Now, you had two veteran television, big star comedians, probably best known from television, and also known from, like, children's films, who were the police officers. That played two cops together.
Don Knotts,
and
Tom,
it was the guy who was in the movies with him.
Oh,
sidekick in the movie.
Tim Conway. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
This guy was on
stars of the Apple Dumpling Gang.
The Apple Dumpling Gang, exactly. Now, so this is all of the. Remember, you have Sammy Dean.
What was
Frank,
the fucking?
And then
what
okay,
what was the fucking Don Knotts, Tim Conway movie? From about 1979, where they were like detectives.
Oh, they were detectives in
a
house.
Haunted
oh,
house.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Scared, spooky, or
Scared Straight, maybe.
Oh, I gotta look
scared,
that up.
Yeah, that all was right. good. All right. Okay. By the way, Jack Alam reprising his role
oh, he's back
as the doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, he rides with Jamie Farr in this one. Okay. This you'll never get because I don't think he was famous for what he became. But the guy who was the sergeant who was chasing them around was Fred Dreyer.
Okay.
Who became
all
famous
right.
from
who's
Hunter.
On Hunter. Who's
and
a
was a football player.
LA Rams.
LA Rams football player.
Tight end
now,
or something.
There's a guy. There's a guy. Okay. There's a hillbilly car dealer.
This is a cat.
There's a hill. I know. This is a great movie. I wonder if I have it in. There's a hillbilly car dealer who gets a car and he puts the car into the race. But and it's an old time hillbilly television actor who is, plays that guy. Do you know who that is?
Old-time hillbilly
television Buddy actor. Epson? George Lindsay. Goober.
Oh, George fucking
Goober.
Lindsay.
Now his,
God, I have not watched this in a long time.
His nephew. Okay, now he has a nephew.
Yeah.
Now his nephew's from Brooklyn, New York, and he ends up driving the car with him. And who is his nephew from New York? An early 80s, 70s New York tough guy,
Tony Danza. Now, all right. Now their gimmick was amazing.
And they
Doug McClure, was he in the cartoon?
I believe it was Doug McClure.
All right.
And Goober and Tony Danza, and they had one other person in the car.
Okay. They had an orangutan.
And I believe it was the famous Clyde. I think it was Clyde from Every.
The fucking gimmick on this one was amazing. This haunted my nightmares.
Okay.
They had a deal where Danza drove. They had like a limo, and but it was rigged up so like Danza drove it, but Clyde was out in front.
There was a steering wheel in the front
with,
of the car.
Fake steering wheel, so it looked like the monkey was driving the limo.
Yeah, it's great. You know, this movie has everything. It has all of the 80s tropes. You know, the car chases, the chimpanzee is a comic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really great.
There's another team in there that's amazing.
Okay, let me go. Now, who are the mafia guys that they're chasing down Sammy and Dean in this?
Oh.
And two guys actually from The Godfather, as well as another like legendary tough guy character actor.
I'm trying to remember who the mobsters were.
Well, there's actually four guys, but the one guy's not that famous. It was a guy named Michael Gazzo, who I think he might have been in The Godfather. Okay. But the other guys were two famous Godfather guys. One guy we just
Alex
lost.
Rocco?
Alex Rocco.
Yeah.
Abe Vigoda.
Okay.
And then, you've already got those three guys as your mobsters.
Mm-hmm.
Who's another anvil-faced tough guy to add to the
Burt
tough
Young?
Guy?
Who was
Henry Silva.
Henry Silva.
And if you know where Henry Silva, everyone knows. He was like a, he
I
was
really mad. One time we did a challenge where you were like, name these characters.
Name the character actors.
And I blanked on Henry Silva
Henry
and I got real mad.
Get, yeah. Yeah. I didn't see it, but apparently Joe Theismann is in there somewhere. Now, I did see Burt Reynolds is doing a stunt show at the beginning. That's his way of earning a living.
Yeah.
And it's him and Dom DeLuise running a stunt show. And they're dropping him from like a bomb. There's like a bomb casing.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to drop him at an air show.
I'm remembering all this, yeah.
And do you remember who the pilot was?
Jesus
now, the
Christ.
Pilot, the guy who's piloting the plane is a crazy guy who might actually be a Nazi, apparently. Do you remember the television actor who played him? Another very famous guy.
Werner
from
Klemper?
Television.
No, what?
From television. Not, I don't think he's a German guy for real, but
God,
he,
I have to watch
he was
this
sort
movie.
Of known for playing that kind of guy,
yeah.
though. That was Artie Johnson.
Artie Johnson.
I'm
getting these all fucking mixed up.
And then I'm trying to remember, I think the one other famous, Jim Nabors shows up somewhere as Private Homer Lyle. Which is like, oh, basically they changed two letters from Gomer Pyle to Homer Lyle.
Jim Nabors had some weird friendship with Burt Reynolds.
Yeah.
Where they were everybody's.
Ricardo Montalban, I didn't see him in there, but he's in there. Richard Kiel drives a Mitsubishi.
With Jackie Chan.
Chan is in
it's
there.
It's an amazing team.
And their
Mitsubishi's all gimmicked up, so it's got like, it's got like inkjet, it's got like smoke bombs.
All the
and
hot
stuff.
Japanese technology.
Yeah. Which not anywhere near a Japanese person. In
and then and Mel Tillis is in there as Mel, who I didn't see that part of the movie.
There's
the other
a big
day.
Bar brawl at a like a roadside
a roadhouse,
road stand, and Jackie Chan. And this is the first time I saw Jackie Chan as a kid. And Jackie Chan's doing like his stunts and stuff. And you're like,
was Jackie Chan not in the first one?
No,
it was just the second one.
I don't think
one.
So.
Because I remember Roger Moore was in the first one.
Yes.
And he does that fight scene where he goes, I'm Roger Moore. And the guy goes, who? He goes, Roger Moore. And the guy punches him in the face.
Right.
Like he was trying to be James Bond. And it didn't.
Roger Moore had an eject. He was doing like a
Bond
gimmick.
Yeah.
In the first one, he had an ejector seat.
Well, that's what I mean. They all bring their gimmick, you know, Goober and Gomer.
Right. They're just,
and the Rat Pack. And they all bring their gimmicks to this movie. And here's a, I guess because Frankie's in it and those guys. Can you tell me who would have played Jilly in Cannonball Run 2?
Jilly Rizzo?
Jilly played Jilly.
Is Joey Bishop
why
in there?
Would you, I didn't see Joey Bishop in there.
Peter Lawford? Did they work all those guys into there?
No, apparently not, but the main three Rat Pack guys are in this. So anyway, Cannonball Run 2. I believe it has 2.5 stars on IMDb. It was playing on HDNet Movies. If you have that, you can probably catch a replay of that. So, by the way, if you love Canon, we talked about Canon. I believe it's MGM HD Thursday night coming up. So if you're listening to this, maybe the day you're listening.
Okay.
Breaking and Breaking 2 double features. So there you go.
Oh, Jesus.
If you're a fan of canon and you want to catch up.
The Great Boogaloo Shrimp.
And why not?
And Shabadoo Quinones.
Shabadoo, yeah.
And, of course,
The woman.
The incredible Linnea Quigley.
Yeah.
You can watch all of that magic.
And then...
it's really... I can't, again, stress how great Electric Boogaloo, the true story of canon films or what it was called.
That's great, yeah.
It's just fantastic.
I saw that at the... I was at Walmart a couple weeks ago.
That's like a $5 DVD.
And I sent it to Corey. No, well, there's a box set. And it's Electric Boogaloo, yes. The documentary,
right.
And then a bunch of canon movies.
Bunch of like
but it's
Chuck
all,
Norris movies.
Unfortunately, it's all Chuck Norris, Stallone, and Van Damme movies. It's not the Ninja movies, and it's not the Breaking movies.
No, it's not
but
the,
that was, I think, about $30.
It's not the good stuff.
It's not the good canon movies that we want. It's not Last American Virgin. It's a lot of the action movies. But if you want to pick that up, you can go get that. And, of course, Electric Boogaloo's on Netflix, so everyone should watch that.
There you go.
Speaking of TV and streaming, one of our favorite shows, Togetherness,
yes,
did an episode in Detroit where these couple of the characters are from. And they go back to Detroit, and they did lots of Detroit stuff. And, you know, I had seen it, and I told Corey, you hadn't seen it yet. And I go, well, I go, is it feasible that they could have done all that Detroit stuff in one day? And I have my verdict. What's yours?
Well, they go from Hamtramck to the Bronx, which
they go to the airport, from the airport.
Uh-huh.
And I believe they go, do they go to the Belle Isle Bridge first?
They're on Belle Isle, yeah.
Because he's, Mark Duplass says, I used to run, I used to run, and he takes him to the Belle Isle Bridge and they're running, okay?
So
that's a good 30-minute ride there.
Okay, so it's a good half hour from the airport to downtown, or 20 minutes.
Then they go to Hamtramck for pierogies.
And then they go to Hamtramck for pierogies.
Yeah.
Then they go to the Bronx. Now, that's not a big deal. That's about a 10-minute.
Did they go to Showtime Vintage Clothing before or after the Bronx?
I believe they went there, but I can't... Yes.
Now, could you determine if the Bronx was shot... That is not the interior of the Bronx,
I believe that
correct?
Was not the interior of the Bronx.
I don't think it was either.
The Bronx has these, like, faux Tiffany lamps hanging down. It's the darkest bar.
But it's kind of a 20s bar, too, and that place just looked like a dive in the
it
show.
It does have kind of the wood
Bronx
panel
has,
look.
Yeah.
I thought for a minute it was, but I don't think it was the
I
Bronx.
Don't think it was the Bronx either.
Because I think it's too dark in the Bronx. You'd have to light
it. Well, they could light it, but it just looked like any anonymous bar.
They were standing outside the Bronx.
Yes.
That was certainly the exterior of
the Bronx. Yes, it was the exterior of the Bronx. Then they
were standing in a spot I stood 10,000 times.
Yes.
Because, you know, the Bronx was next door to Zoot's, the coffee shop, mm-hmm. where I would hang out, like, in the mid-90s.
Yep.
And I've hung out at the Bronx many times since
then. Bronx is a fun bar.
So that all made
sense. In the Wayne State area.
And then they went to some house party, which could have been across the street.
Yeah, that house party is probably the Wayne State area. In fact, when they're standing, again, I think they probably shot the interiors of that house party, either on a set or somewhere in L.A., they're standing outside the house, and you can see the Motor City Casino in the background.
Yeah.
So that looked authentic. It looked like it could be off
now,
Trumbull or something.
Where was his dad's house supposed to be?
It looked like the Points, maybe?
That's where the question I have is,
yeah.
If it was supposed to be out in, like, Farmington Hills or something, no way they got out there.
Well, and then, the Points you could make it to, though. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, to me, that blew that was that, you know, he ends up stealing a bike from the party with some girl he's trying to fuck. Should have fucked. It was an old friend.
She was
of his.
Trying to fuck him.
Yeah. And they end up in the slow roll, which is this urban biking thing that they do here in Detroit. But my problem with it was the slow roll is Monday night, I believe.
The slow roll is actually on Monday.
And I find it hard to believe they would have had an ass kicking rock and roll party somewhere downtown in the Wayne State area. On a Monday night, and
well,
then
doesn't
had
slow
this.
Roll run through like right up there? Like
it
up
could
past.
Have the slow roll could have very well
doesn't
gone through
run
that neighborhood.
Through Cass and stuff?
They pick. They actually do. I think they do different routes every time. I've never done slow roll actually, which I should because I like riding bikes. But I've never actually done the slow roll. A part of me is I'm afraid to do it because I can't ride slow. I'll fall over.
Okay.
I like to ride fast.
You need your.
If I don't get enough speed, I'll tumble over.
You know they say it's
my fat.
You know
high
they say it's like
get
riding a bike. You never forget. I haven't been on a bike in a long time. I would feel.
No,
like,
I ride pretty regularly.
I would feel I would
in
be.
The summer.
I'd be real. I'd be real shaky.
Well, I'll tell you how. When I rode a bike for the first time after many, many, many years, was I took a trip to Toronto with my girlfriend at the time, Heather, who we've had on the show. I had on the show anyway. And we went to Toronto, and I said, well, as a kid, I used to ride, I rode my bike once on these islands. There's islands right off the coast of Toronto where there's no cars. And you can rent a bike and ride around. And so we found a guy to rent us bikes, and we rented bikes in downtown Toronto and then took him on the ferry, and we rode around on these islands all day. And it was pretty fun. All
right.
And so I said, let's do that. And so we did. But I hadn't ridden a bike in 10, 15 years maybe.
Yeah.
And so I immediately rented a bike in downtown Toronto and had to ride through downtown Toronto traffic for the first time of riding a bike in 15 years. It was terrifying.
Sounds like a good plan.
But once I got to the islands, I was good. And I continue to bike on a pretty regular basis since then. So, I like that togetherness. It was a good episode. Even though they clearly fudged the Bronx, and they fudged Slow Roll on a weekend.
Well, I would have fudged that chick that was trying.
That's a good term for it, fudging her.
I would have fudged her.
But yeah, that
I
was.
I would have fudged her.
Well, I mean, in the storyline, you're going, well, look, the wife banged some guy, and you know, why not? You know, go for it.
I guess. Okay, now I went back. Jackie Chan is in Cannonball Run.
Yeah, I thought he was in Cannonball Run, yeah.
I remember he was with Richard Kiel in Cannonball Run.
In Cannonball Run 2, yeah. But
now I got to watch. Now, speaking of Walmart, I got to run right over to Walmart and see if they have a Cannonball Run.
But, you know, you think that stuff would be available for streaming, and it's not. I've looked. It's hard. Sometimes the television people have the contract, and then if it's on television, because that was the problem I had when I was trying to find...
Well, see, Bert Convy was in the first one.
Yes.
What happened for me, I got the first and second Cannonball Runs all mashed
up. That's fine. It's totally fine.
So I was like, I know Bert Convy's
in there
somewhere.
They're not that different.
Right.
Yeah.
Jesus. They're not that different. But
it's amazing that you make a show. You know, you really can't make a movie like that now. I don't know if it's like the salary reason you wouldn't make a movie like that now. I mean, I know they made some mystery movie with Seth Green and Whoopi and a bunch of people a few years ago. Do you remember that thing? It was considered one of the worst movies of the year it came out, where they did this thing where they tried to do It's a Mad, 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 Mad World or something. Because really, Cannonball Run 2 was kind of the end of those. You know, I mean, you do get big ensemble, you know, Apatow comedies where there's lots of people for a minute. But the thing about those is that there were people from different genres that you wouldn't put the Mayberry guys and the Rat Pack in the same movie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You wouldn't put the Bond villains in with the Smokey and the Bandit guys, but those movies did. And no one's really doing that anymore. And maybe we should. I don't know.
Well, you'll get a little bit of like...
You know, the crossover thing.
Well, you'll get a little bit of like, if there's a comedy, like you'll get cameos from a bunch of...
Yeah,
you know,
but
like,
it's not the same.
You know what I mean? Like the
though.
Wilson brothers and...
Yeah, yeah.
And all the SNL people will kind of cameo in a movie. You know what
right.
I mean?
Like when you see...
Tina Fey makes a movie, they'll be... All the SNL people in it and stuff, but
you
it's
see
not,
21 Jump Street, and there's a bunch of guys showing up.
But they don't build. They used to build these like everybody. You know, it's a mad
night
world.
Of 100 stars.
Yeah, and
in
it was
movie,
it'd
and
be a big jam clusterfuck bukkake of medium talent drunk comedians.
Well, there was you know what was it movie 43 that came out, which was sketches and then a bunch of big
which
stars.
Which was one of the worst things ever.
But maybe they should do this, because think about it. You had all of these different audiences who could now go to Cannonball Run. You know, you were a fan of this guy, he was in it. You're a fan of this guy, he's in it. I mean, imagine now you do something.
Did they not let black people in the Cannonball Run? Was it not?
Well, Sammy was in it.
Oh, Sammy. That was day one.
Sammy was probably the one, though.
That was,
Sammy,
but you didn't even think of Sammy as a black guy.
No, Sammy was...
Sammy was just
a Jew.
Exactly.
He became a Jew. He became a Jew. He converted.
Yeah.
Sammy became a Jew.
Sammy.
But
Carl Weathers couldn't get one of those?
Yeah, I don't know where.
John Amos couldn't be driving a truck?
I don't know why they couldn't find a guy from, you know, they couldn't get Pam Grier and
somebody
to come
there,
out.
Right.
And no. But Cannonball Run 2, look for that on your local cable tuning thing.
What was? Would you see that on, like, a digital 2?
It was on, HDNet Movies.
Okay.
They have good movies. They're commercial free. MGM HD sometimes puts commercials in, I think. They have limited commercials. Mm-hmm. But both of those channels have really good, like, obscure movies. Like, it's kind of what AMC used to be, in a way. Because AMC is
I'll
too
tell,
mainstream
I'll tell you
now.
What, there is some cool stuff. Speaking of the digital twos, there's like, movies and Grit, which is, like, all war movies. they'll see some wacky stuff on there sometimes.
Yeah, you see stuff that's sort
there's
of out
Bounce,
of circulation.
Which has a lot of like blaxploitation movies and stuff. So there's some
But
I gotta say there's cooler stuff that's been on like broadcast TV than ever was.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, AMC and you know TCM has stuff, but it, sometimes it's limited.
TCM has stuff that you won't find anywhere else.
Yeah, TCM does.
You can't even find like DVDs of some of the stuff they run on TCM.
Yeah. All right, so that
Nerd it out.
Do you want to talk about this? We had a couple minutes here. We were talking the other night about
back to the HBO shows.
Oh, you want to talk? Oh yeah, yeah. You wanted to talk about one of the
other
ones.
A report from I polled the fans, and we did get a response.
Oh, okay. I did not poll.
Now,
fans
have you been watching
today?
Girls?
Yes, Girls has been okay this season. I'm enjoying Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Jemima Kirk this week, get naked.
That's right. That's right. And unfortunately,
he
also
was followed by a butt fuck scene, but two guys
followed
butt
by a real graphic,
a very
gay
graphic
scene.
Gay sex scene.
Well, it wasn't like, you know, graphic in that we didn't see bowls, but
no, but it was, it was a lot of humping and sweating. It was a lot of, it was every bit as graphic as the female love scene, the guy girl love
scene.
They
were playing that gay sex scene for comedy,
yeah,
because the one guy was being a bossy bottom,
yeah,
but
well, I don't have a term for that, but it's nice that you do. It's nice that you have a term for it.
It's a term. Look, hey, do we not go to Pride Fest?
We did. Yeah, you learn there.
It's from the community.
Did Edith Uranus teach you that term?
I know people. Okay. I have friends.
All right, so yeah, the two guys are banging.
Yeah, that's when you're the bossy bottom is when you're you know,
I just,
or also the power bottom.
Yes.
These are when you're pushy, you know.
I felt very sad for the guys. I was not one of them. I would admit if I was. They set a trap for you on Girls, Corey. They set a trap.
Yeah.
If you were trying to beat off to Jemima Kirk,
they cut
right to the homos. And you know there's guys who blew their load to the gay guys fucking. And I feel bad for those guys today. It doesn't make you gay. You're okay.
Look,
you're not gay just because that happened.
You know, Elijah's a regular character on there.
Yeah, he's a regular, yeah.
Go ahead. I mean, I'm glad. I was expecting him to go on a date and make out with the guy.
Sure.
I was not expecting the full on. And I don't even. Now, I am no expert on gay sex.
No.
But it didn't look like the angle he was at was going to work.
They were missionary. And you know what? That's enough of this. What else? What are the fans saying?
It didn't look like it.
Right, I'm not.
Amy O'Preen says, my feelings on the new season of Girls, which I've watched half of the first episode. So she's really done her homework.
Oh, she's a big fan.
I'm telling you.
Well, I'm glad she has an opinion.
I was a staunch Lena Dunham defender for forever, but honestly, she just sucks.
Oh, turned.
Once you get past the millennials are the worst shtick of Girls, there's virtually no story or substance.
Well,
there's some decent comedic moments, but that's about it. All right, well, a slam from Amy.
Let her know that there's a show called Sex in the City, which is for women more her age. Let her
Isn't
know that.
Girls the younger sex? No,
well, that's what I mean. That's a knock on.
By the way, sick burn.
No, it was. I'm kidding. I mean, I don't know.
Amy's a
But you can't. I mean, look, to
Amy's
me.
Amy's a youngish lady.
To me, Girls is only.
Thanks for writing
but girls, in. Girls sucked in season two, and I think last season kind of sucked too, but I'm enjoying this one.
Yeah.
I mean, the Girls actually makes me laugh. Like, it's actually a comedy where I will laugh out loud. Which is not the case with something like
I felt that, like, this season has been better so far.
Right, but when I watch Love, which, by the way, everyone's flipping out about Love on Netflix, and we talked about it, it's okay. It's never made me laugh. I've watched two episodes of that. It's amusing, but it never makes me laugh.
Wait, did you not enjoy when they did Jet?
I don't think I saw that episode. I saw the first two.
Oh, they were jamming at a party.
Okay, well, that's...
And they played Jet by Wings.
I don't think I will laugh out loud at them jamming to Jet. A good musical choice. I don't think it's going to make me laugh out loud. Girls makes me laugh. I like Girls.
I've laughed a couple times at Love. It's not the funniest show.
It's just it's
you know by you know
it's,
no.
it's is it better than New Girl at this point? Absolutely, but it's not.
Well, everything's better.
Everything's better. New Girl is like, God, boy, talk about a train wreck. You know, Zoe's not even on it now.
No, it's like
I think Zoe's having a kid or something. So
yeah, it's what's her name?
They've moved in Megan
Bim,
Fox.
The Bim from the Turtle movies.
The Bim. Megan Fox.
Bim from the Turtles.
Well, she's the hallmark of quality, right? Ninja Turtles, Transformers.
You know your shit's really on fire when you get
So they've got her on there now, and it's like the whole premise of New Girl like doesn't even work anymore. It's a whole mess. So I don't know who watches that. But anyway, do you want to talk about Vinyl on HBO? Is there any comments on that?
God,
I mean, I know
Vinyl.
Well, you haven't watched all of them. I've been watching it. I'm enjoying
it. I've watched like a good chunk of it.
It's okay to admit that you haven't watched him. It's okay.
No, I mean,
it's fine. You haven't watched him.
Okay.
You've watched a couple of them, but you haven't watched all of them.
What are you getting a cookie for?
Well,
watching
no, but I watch it because I enjoy it. I wouldn't watch it if it sucked. If it sucked, I'd come and I'd tell you it sucked.
All right, you get so offended when somebody doesn't like something you like.
Well, you're
Amy watched half of one episode and then said, "Fuck Lena Dunham." But I have watched a significant. Amy listens to every episode.
I like it that this show never. I guess this show doesn't offend her.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Girls is awful.
In fact, I've tried to get her to come on the show.
Yeah, she used to live in my house.
She's an improv performer.
We'd like her to be on the show. She won't
do
come.
Some bit. All right. And that offer stands.
Yeah, she can come.
I'll sweeten the pot. I'll throw in some toffee fey. Whatever you want.
Whatever.
Some ginkgo biloba. I don't care. Whatever it is. Some ginseng.
What about vinyl? Tell us about vinyl.
Okay. My big issue with vinyl is, okay. Now obviously, that's been a all right.
Yeah.
That's been an issue. Okay. We're in the era since Tony Soprano. Obviously, I'm sure there were precedents before that, but. The anti-hero is a big thing on HBO and in other shows like Breaking Bad. The anti-hero is the new model when you're like, I'm doing a serious drama.
Yeah.
Well, this guy played, it's just so aggravating. Richie.
Yes.
As played by
Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale, who was on Boardwalk Empire.
Yes.
I'll tell you what, Nucky on Boardwalk Empire did a lot of horrible, reprehensible stuff.
Yes.
But we were generally on his side.
Well, he was better. He was the good guy of the bad guys.
Yes.
In a way. You know, there were guys way worse than him.
He was attempting to have a code of honor in a den of thieves and villains. And everybody else on that show was even more reprehensible. I eventually got a little tired of Boardwalk Empire because it was just a parade of misery.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was just like, the 20s sucked, didn't they?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
everybody was doing heroin. And
I got
each other up with blackjacks.
I got a little turned off by. I don't think I finished the final season of Boardwalk Empire, and they were doing like flashbacks to when Nucky was a kid and stuff. And I lost interest in that very final season of Boardwalk Empire, but it was a solid show, and it's the same guy who made this. It's Terrence Winter and Scorsese.
But on this one, I just find the lead character to be such a turd.
Yeah, no, you're kind of right.
He's so unpleasant. He's so angry.
Yes.
We're rooting for a record label guy.
Yeah,
fuck the record labels.
A cokehead.
If any business deserved to fail, it was the music record labels who were blood sucking ticks.
Yes.
And he's yelling at all these punk rock kids for, you know, I'll tell you how to do it.
Yeah.
This is every line of dialogue from Bobby Cannavale. What the fuck is wrong with you, you fucking bitch?
Yeah.
I'll slap the taste out of your fucking face. And it's just like, you know what I mean? It's just old.
It is.
Every line, right?
You're not wrong.
I mean, linguine, cunt. It's like, what is this Master Choli bullshit?
Well, it's down. You're right. It is extremely aggressive. I think there are characters, you know, the characters that you might be like or might be sympathetic aren't given the same screen time as the assholes.
Right.
You know, like Ray Romano had a nice little arc in the first couple episodes.
Yeah.
And now he was on like, he had like two lines the other night, so it wasn't as good. But look, let me give you the pros and cons. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the pros. Juno Temple gets her tits out.
Sure.
Okay. Now here's the cons. Yeah. I enjoy that rock and roll culture, and I enjoy seeing their take on it. Even though, you know, people are going to be mad that, you know, well, it was guys pretending to be the New York Dolls, and it was guys pretending to be Velvet Underground, and guys pretending to be, you know, Howlin' Wolf and all these other people that they focus. But I think it shows an appreciation for that music. Alice Cooper, that a guy play Alice Cooper.
Well, they got Bowie coming up next week.
Okay, so we'll see
how bad they fucked that up.
You know, they had Zeppelin. They didn't do a good job with Zeppelin, but, you know, they were on there. So I don't know.
What does crack me up is that Max Casella, who played Vinny on Doogie Howser, is on there looking like a real scuzzball.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that they
do. He reminds me of who was Angel on the Rockford Files?
Oh, I
do. You know what I'm saying?
Before my time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they you know, vinyls. It's not for everybody. I like that era of rock and roll. I like that Scorsese style. I like Terrence Winter's writing. It's not pleasant, but it is viscerally exciting, though. I do find that style of filmmaking exciting.
Hanwick is okay. The guy they got playing Lou Reed.
All right. But, you know, and there was some good, you know, in addition to that, you've seen Olivia Wilde's tits on there. If you've watched every episode,
well, sure.
There was a great scene where basically this guy who's kind of the Sly Stone on that show, you know, fictional rock star.
Yeah.
Is basically she's offered up to this guy as an incentive to stay on the label. And Richie kind of puts her up to, you know, seducing him. Yeah. And that was a pretty killer scene. And yeah, there's some good stuff on vinyl. I like it.
It seems like it's got elements. It's got all the elements. That
yeah,
I
it
should,
does. It,
I should like it.
It's all the stuff you should like, but it
and
doesn't
then when
come
I watch it,
you.
It just feels gross.
Mick Jagger's son plays the punk rock guy.
James.
He's really not very good.
No.
Unfortunately, and it's hard because you're going like, you know, and Richie's sort of, you know, Cannavale's going like, he's the reason I signed the band. I just want him. I don't want the backing guys.
Get rid of this guitar player was a lump.
And, but you kind of go, well, maybe that lead singer's not that good either. Maybe, you know, that doesn't hold enough weight with me. But I'm going to stick with it. I know that the old guys
hate it.
The guys who are around then
now,
don't like
but
it.
This is the problem. If you're an expert on anything, if they do a show about it, you're going to be upset.
Right.
Now, you and I have found very few of the attempts to do shows about stand-up comedy to resonate.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Mike Birbiglia's Sleepwalk With Me was fairly close.
That was not a bad depiction of stand-up comedy.
But, you know, every comic joke's about Punchline. Well, the one with Tom Hanks and Sally
Punchline
Field.
Was terrible.
You know, where there's like
obvious
a,
child,
where there's a dressing room.
Obvious
there's
Child.
A, there's like lockers
comedy,
in the back
okay.
of the comedy club.
Obvious
Child, yeah.
Obvious Child did. I mean, that was basically open mic comedy, but it was done fairly well. Yeah. But they did. I mean, the use of music is very good. I mean, a song that I played for everybody a couple weeks ago, "Oh Babe, What Would You Say," was featured in a very key scene. Do you remember that? Do you even remember "Oh Babe"? Hurricane Smith.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let me find it here on my.
Yeah, screen. You played that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, but that was the very key scene with Dice. I don't want to ruin it, but if you watch that, I don't know. I have to.
I heard a funny story on another podcast
about Dice.
That Dice
is a little Hurricane Smith for you. Actually, this is a remake. Damn it! See, sometimes you got to be careful. Sometimes you get the remix. Yeah, I think that's a re-record too. Maybe this is it. Oh, God, that's a terrible re-record. Okay, enough of that. I could find the original, but go tell a story about Dice.
Well, spoilers, but Dice's character, something unpleasant happens to him.
It's a key scene in the show.
All right.
And that's what they used "Oh Babe, What Would You Say" for.
Well, Dice kept trying to insert some dialogue into the scene
to ensure
that he would appear in later episodes.
Well, yeah, it's a fight.
And then Scorsese.
Go ahead and
like,
ruin it. If you don't want to know about vinyl, you haven't watched it yet, maybe don't listen for the next 30 seconds. Go ahead, Corey.
Well, Dice just kept saying, "My twin brother," because he was trying to leave open the door. He could come
Dice,
back. And
Dice
film.
Passes away on the show. Let's put it that way. His character does not make
by
it.
By the way, Dice is coming to Andiamo. I'm trying to get the inside loop on that one. How bad would opening for Dice be?
Corey needed the money.
Go. Well, you know, the bit I do for my wife is Dice is a baby.
Dice is a baby.
I made a pee pee at the party. Mommy,
now, here's the thing
I
about Dice.
Poopy.
First of all, Dice is great on vinyl. He's fucking great on vinyl. You can't even
Dice was good. You can't
even argue that. He's fucking great.
I know.
It's a shame he's not on more episodes because he's fucking
great. Well, maybe his twin brother will
show up. Do a spin-off show with Dice. Dice before he met Richie. Who knows? Okay. But the thing about Dice, here's the thing about Dice that you have to give him, and anybody like Ray Saluga or any of these guys, you really have to give him credit.
Ray Saluga?
Well, I'm just saying, they create characters that you never forget. You know, no one's ever going to forget those early Dice routines from the Rodney specials and that. They're famous. You know, Sam Kinison. No one's ever going to forget those.
Speaking of that.
And who can make.
There was a younger comic. Well, he's not younger in terms of chronological, but in terms of his time in the business. That posted the other couple, you know, last week. I feel like characters are just bullshit. Like, well, it's not honest.
But that's you know.
And I was just like, well, then you didn't like 80s comedy.
Well, you didn't like, you don't like comedy. You don't like 50s comedy. You don't like, you know,
yeah,
modern comedy, because boy, that, you know.
I mean, they're really, yeah, everybody was doing characters.
Well, look, we found out a little about the real Louis C.K., and I think I'm going to enjoy his character. Let's call that a character, and we'll go with that.
I mean,
you didn't like that. You didn't like that Cosby character. You want the real guy?
Oh, yeah.
Is that what you want?
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. There, everybody's a douche if you look deep enough, and you know, yeah, there's reasons. You know, when
well, okay, you'll, you know. I kind of understand. Okay, I kind of sympathize with that opinion to some degree.
Yeah.
In that, if you do a real calculated, like, you know,
sure, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
SNL did the Catchphrases of Comedy Tour, which I love.
Yes.
Where they're all goofy catchphrases.
They've
comedians.
All got it. Phrase, yeah.
Bobby Moynihan's Slappy Pappy,
yeah,
makes me laugh on there every time. Right. You know, if a Dracula's following you, turn around and trip the bitch.
Yeah,
but which is like every bad, like,
yeah,
you know, show, not Showtime at the Ball. What's the Comic View?
BET Comic,
yeah,
View. Yeah,
it's like every bad Comic View, yeah, comic. I get the point about that, but like, you're leaving no, if you leave no room for people doing characters,
yes,
you're right. You're cutting out.
Yeah, you are,
lot
but it's also, there's the, I mean, look, there's Larry the Cable Guy, which is a complete fabrication.
Yes.
And then there's guys who just have a subtler character.
Dan,
you know,
Whitney is,
but I mean,
not,
you know,
Larry the Cable Guy.
But I mean, I think that, you know, I would say guys like, you know, Colbert has a character. I mean, obviously, I mean, character, he literally, yes, had the character, but he still, yes, has, you know, but he's got a little bit of a shtick. You kind of need, I mean, Seinfeld, yeah, is a character.
You know, I know you don't care for Colbert too much, but I was watching and he had Bill Maher on.
Okay.
And Bill was clearly annoyed with him.
Yeah.
And Bill, like, couldn't jive with him.
Well,
and
Bill,
Amy, my wife, Amy,
yeah,
nailed it. She said it's improv versus stand up.
Yeah, a little
and
bit.
Colbert is an improv guy.
Yeah.
And Bill was setting up punchlines.
Yeah.
And Colbert just kept going, but what about this?
That's,
he was doing like,
yeah,
an improv, like, yes, and,
yeah, yeah,
where Bill was leading to a punchline.
Well, I think Marr probably feels like he created that format in his own way.
Well,
I
think Steven's Catholic, which makes Bill crazy. You know what I mean? Like,
well, but I mean, you know, I don't, yeah, think you can look, you know, I think there's a Seinfeld character, then there's real Seinfeld, who just sold, you know, $2.2 million worth of Porsches or whatever. He sold $20 million. It was $22 million worth of Porsches.
I cleared out a couple Porsches.
And that's the real Seinfeld. Ooh. So, you know, everybody's a character, whether you know it or not. I mean, look, there are guys who are so believable that that's the real guy that you can't get the character. But you're missing the big picture when you go, that's not a character. Everybody's a character. Sometimes your own character is who you are. You know, maybe that's you. But, you know, like, I mean, if you're Corey Hall and you're on stage ranting and raving about stuff, you're not really pissed off about Walmart at that moment when you're saying that.
No, because I've said it 200 times.
Was real. It was a real emotion at one point when you wrote that joke. But you're performing it. It's a performance. Comedy's a performance.
Yeah.
It has to be a performance.
I mean, just in terms of, I thought that was an interesting, I was like, do I agree with this or not? I kind of don't, but.
It's, you're right when you talk about, you know, the Gallaghers and, you know,
yeah,
you don't like the Cable Guys or, you know, some of these, the real shtick, you know, real shtick, you know,
well, then people,
Judy Tenuta's and Emo
same,
Phillips
people
and that
in that
kind of
same
stuff.
Thread were like, no, that's really how emo is.
Well, there's that too. You know, there,
yeah,
are guys who are real eccentrics.
Yeah.
You know, there are guys. I mean, look, here's a guy that we know, the funniest man in the world, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes.
Not Gilbert Gottfried off stage.
He is, but he is to the degree that nothing that comes out of his,
right,
mouth on stage is something Gilbert wouldn't say.
Yeah.
But his demeanor is totally
but
different.
He's not, he doesn't yell and scream. He's still a neurotic, weird guy off, yeah, stage, but that thing is, I mean, when I did the interview for the show,
yeah,
we were having a regular conversation,
right, right,
and I was trying to convince him to do this interview with me.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know if I want to do it, and I go, come on, just do it. He's like, okay, I'm here with Gilbert Gottfried. Yes, I'm getting, you know, and
when the mic's on,
yeah, immediately.
Well, that's what's funny is I've interviewed Gilbert twice,
yeah,
and worked with him,
mm-hmm,
and he's a delight, like, in person. I mean,
he's a really funny dude off stage. And
like,
hilarious.
Yeah, you're right. He's a little weird.
Yeah.
But as soon as you established that you know what you're talking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I made like one obscure reference, mm-hmm, and suddenly his, you know, you just go, So what did you think about Glenn Strange as Frankenstein? You know, and Gilbert's eyes are light up. Yeah. And,
he can't help himself but go on.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, we talked about, we talked about the Hollywood Squares.
Mentioned Lon Chaney
and
Jr.
He was so excited to talk about the Hollywood Squares. You know, but when you talk to him on the phone, you're like, hello, how are you?
Yeah,
this is Gilbert, he's not doing the, you'll hear a little hint of it, but he's not doing the elevated shtick.
Yeah, he doesn't.
But then as soon as the microphones
But that is him. You know, the yelling guy, you know, I mean, the thing is, what people don't realize is, you know, that makes the, it makes the comedy funnier. You know,
well,
it makes the comedy funnier to yell it. It made funny when Kinison was yelling.
Sure.
Kinison was doing that for effect. You know, it's not.
Very few guys have been legitimately like, okay, like, I don't know, like, you'd have to go back to the dickhead with the sweaters in the 50s. Saul.
Mortsall?
Mortsall.
Okay.
That's not really a character.
Guy being himself.
Right. That's not a character at all.
Right, yeah,
it's
sure.
It's just Mortsall being Mortsall.
Yeah.
There's very few guys that were completely okay. You know, George Carlin did characters to begin with.
They had Steve
Weather
Martin
Man and all that stuff. Steve Martin's comedy is definitely not Steve Martin.
It was, you know, Steve Martin was a I guess a parody of the character comedian, and yet it was gigantic because it was a character comedian. You know, I mean, Steve Martin really became what he was parodying, and then he quit. You know, that was was sort of the whole story with him.
Albert Brooks Albert Brooks did like conceptual bits.
Yeah.
Those are amazing. Mm-hmm. Go look up on YouTube. He's got one like 1976 on like the Mike, I don't even know what show he was on.
Merv Griffin or Mike Douglas or Dinah Shore or something.
Yeah. Some show with an audience. Yeah. And he was doing like new pitches for the national anthem.
Okay.
And it's like a whole acted out bit where everybody gets up and plays the song and they're like, I want to talk about America. It's you know what I mean? And they're all horrible. And he's like doing a bit. It's hilarious, brilliant stuff that's not what anybody's doing now.
Well, you know, the Woody Allen character is this famous, you know, Schlemiel guy. Right. And then he made movies like Hannah and Her Sisters and Crimes and Misdemeanors and more serious. But you know, he also made more serious, heavier stuff. But you know, he would make movies like, you know, Stardust Memories, where he wasn't really doing comedy. He was more.
I love that movie. But
that's a great movie. But you know, I mean, he's a guy who the character. There's a reason why guys do the character. And you know, everybody. And this is the thing I teach in comedy class. You know, it is a performance. You have to be a character. That character is probably yourself, but that's okay. Yeah. You still have to get into that headspace. You know, the guys who show up like nowadays that you hear about who are genuinely being themselves, that's like when Dave Chappelle gets on stage and rambles for 3 hours when he's high on crack cocaine. That's probably a guy being real, but that ain't good comedy. You know, that's not what audiences want. So, you know, I mean, look. There is always that illusion of this is real. That's what you want. And guys like Dice did that where you know, you knew it wasn't real, but people bought into Dice.
I haven't dealt with too many people that were characters, like real characters in terms of performing.
Right.
But I do remember a guy that wore a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
That would offstage.
I remember that guy.
That offstage would be like, yeah, man, what time are we? You want to have dinner after this? And then you like announce him to go on stage and be like, hey, y'all.
Yeah, I know.
Y'all ever roped a steer?
I remember that guy. You came up and he's like, is it the one show tonight or two? I'm like, yeah, there's two. Okay, man. All right, man. Well, have a good one. Yeah, all right. Have a good one. Hi, everybody. Welcome, baby.
You know, he would totally be like,
complete hillbilly. Yeah.
Y'all ever go on frog gigging naked? Yeah. I mean, he would just really get right into the hillbilly thing.
Yeah.
Put the cowboy hat on and afterwards be like, somebody got a smoke. Winston's are fine. I don't care. Whatever you got. I mean, you know, like, that's it, but that's comedy. Yeah, that's what people do.
That's what it
is. So the character thing, I mean, whatever.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, people obviously now, the more exaggerated characters don't quite work with a sophisticated audience today. But, you know, things come and go. And some guys would rather do that character and take the chance that they become the next Larry the Cable Guy, and some guys would be more content, you know, being themselves and being a smaller guy. That's okay too.
I think the 80s. I don't know, the whole, that was a big thing in the 80s, was doing character comedy.
Well, you know, now, but that's the thing, is now with podcasting, now with all these things where, you know, you have to, even talk shows, you know, but guys used to be characters on talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys would talk to Johnny Carson in the shtick. You know,
oh, yeah.
Guys would talk, you know, nowadays you expect guys to sort of break that down when they go do Marin or something. And you know,
Carson, they're rerunning those on Antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And those are pretty fascinating because when it's an actor or somebody, Johnny completely dismantles them, breaks them down, and they have a kind of casual,
yes,
unrehearsed conversation.
Yes.
When a comedian comes on, like Shandling, he's just setting up all his punchlines.
Yeah.
It's like a totally rehearsed.
But Johnny was good at that.
It's like
Johnny
a totally rehearsed routine.
Johnny would let you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. All right.
It was a good thing. So.
All right. I think we've said our piece.
Well, we have a bit. Here's the thing. This thing that I wrote on here that we talked about last night on the phone, mm-hmm, I think I'm going to save it for the next show because what we'll do is we'll turn that over to the audience.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm talking about? The it's the second thing on here.
Yeah.
Well, just because I think if we put that out to the audience, they might have better, good examples of that.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Yeah, because we're almost at 2 hours.
We'll do that next time.
We'll do that next time. I'll save it on the agenda, and
all
then
right,
we'll do it next time.
All right,
so.
We've set our
anyway, go ahead, check out the All Access interview with me on JewelRadio.net. I'll link to that.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget about Corey at the Shores Comedy Club coming up.
And April 9th, I'll be at O'Mara's with our buddy J. Chris Newberg.
J. Chris Newberg.
We'll be back in town, so come and check that
and,
out.
And if you want to learn,
O'Mara's in Berkeley.
If you're a stand-up or a wannabe stand-up and you're doing some stuff, you want to take the advanced comedy class, call 248-542-9900. Sign up for that at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
Oh, April 1st at the UFO Factory. I'm doing a showcase.
Well, look at you.
In Corktown. So
oh
I'll be
God.
Doing comedy all over the place.
Look at us actually working.
I know, doing comedy.
And doing things in show business.
Well, I'm like, I'm also doing gigs with Landau in like some banquet hall. But I mean, it's like I can't.
We're doing a fundraiser in April, which we can plug later.
April
too.
19th.
You can see both of us on the same show.
Oh, that's like a night of 1,000 stars.
Yeah, that is. That is almost.
That'll be our Cannonball Run.
Cannonball Run 4
I
with
think,
Joel
we'll
and Corey.
Have some, I think guys that have been on the show will be there.
Yeah, I think there's a few guys. Sal,
you're a long-time listener.
Yeah, so. That'll be a good show. So come check that out. We're going to get out of here for tonight, for today. Joel Radio, thanks you. And keep listening, keep supporting the show, and come to our gigs, take our classes.
Keep watching the skies.
Keep watching the skies.
The truth is out there.
I will be at the Alan Ball funeral
just
to make sure that he's dead.
You really hated this guy.
I'm going to stand over his casket and give him the light. Is that okay? Is that wrong of me?
Did he have 8x10s of things he shouldn't have had 8x10s of? No.
I'm going to run his merch stand after the funeral. I'll be outside with the t-shirt.
Did he have connections to organizations you shouldn't have been involved in?
What a dick.
Oh.
Anyway, good night, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Oh,
see ya.
My.